This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhat, and welcome to the People Speak radio show, where we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. Today, the people speak with Hannah Sossaman of Prometheus Radio at the PrometheusRadio.org. For 5 years, Hannah Sossaman has led campaigns against Clear Channel, the National Association of Broadcasters, for responsible limits on media consolidation in the United States. She's a key organizer of major FCC, Federal Communications Commission localism hearings in San Antonio and Rapid City in 2004, as well as in Nashville in 2006. Hannah just came back from building 3 radio stations across Kenya with independent African journalists and community organizers and educational groups. Welcome to the People Speak, Hannah.
Hey, thank you so much.
It's wonderful having you here. First of all, Hannah, what I'd like, and I think this is an area where we may end up doing a lot of educating tonight. I didn't know a lot about low power radio. And can you tell us a little bit about what low power radio is and how it works?
Sure. Well, I know a lot of listeners are tuning in tonight over the internet or over some of their favorite community radio stations around the United States and around the world. Low-power FM radio is a service that was established in 2000 by the advocacy and agitation of community groups and schools and churches, everyone from the United Council of Evangelicals to the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, and thousands upon thousands of local folks living all across the United States. What they were fighting for was to establish a community radio service because there were not any licenses available for 20 years. You couldn't apply to the FCC and build your own community radio station. There was really no way to do it. So they agitated for the FCC to establish low-power FM radio. These stations broadcast at 100 watts. They go 3 to 5 miles. They're about the power of a light bulb. So they're really perfect for a community, for a neighborhood, for a small town. There's about 800 of these stations on the air all across the United States, and they're doing great work in their communities.
Now, these stations, there were actually, if I'm not mistaken, according to the information that I was able to amass today, you'd had some kind of a victory and in the year 2000, and there were over 3,200 groups that applied for licenses. When you say only 800, were there only 800 licenses available at the time?
That's not true. What ended up happening is that community groups all across the United States in places as diverse as New Orleans, San Francisco, Minneapolis, big cities, as well as small communities like Oroville, California, or Opelousas, Louisiana, or Portsmouth, New Hampshire, applied for these stations. There were going to be up to 4 stations available in a city like New Orleans or 6 in a city like Minneapolis. This service was designed to be both a neighborhood radio service in big cities as well as a town radio service, a low-power FM radio station serving an entire small town. But the National Association of Broadcasters, which is a large organization representing groups like Clear Channel, representing groups like Viacom, which is affiliated with CBS, or Disney, which works with ABC, they were so afraid, the people at the National Association of Broadcasters, that they were so afraid of competition, that if you built one of these stations in a town where you mostly had really terrible radio, which is something that we can talk about later, how media consolidation made the corporate media really, really bad, so they were so afraid of this that they told the FCC that if you put a low-power FM radio station on the dial next to a full-power station, like at 50,000 watts or 100,000 watts, that you'd cause interference, that there would literally be crackling on the dial. So the National Association of Broadcasters wasn't able to convince the FCC of this because it was frankly fake. There was no evidence of this, but they were able to convince Congress that there was enough of a question that Congress limited low-power FM radio just to very rural communities. So before, when you had a low-power FM radio station available in a city like Seattle and a group in there could have applied, now only a place like Spokane, Washington can apply, which is a much smaller community on the eastern side of the state. Before, when a city like Boston might have had a community radio station, now Northampton in western Massachusetts is one of the few communities in Massachusetts that was able to successfully apply for and win one of these licenses. Because of the National Association of Broadcasters' actions, because of what they did in convincing Congress to pass the Radio Broadcast Preservation Act of 2000, over 60% of the potential licenses were lost, of the potential licenses were made no longer available. And that meant that almost every big city in the country that would have had a station lost out. So that's why there's only a little bit over 800 stations on the air today.
Do you think that it's possible to have more than 800 with the new election years and new mandates that are out, Hannah?
Well, what happened was, is when Congress passed that law saying that you needed to limit low-power FM just to really rural communities because the National Association of Broadcasters was afraid of real community radio. Because of that law, they also passed something in the law. There was something called a study that they needed to have done. So the law said that the FCC needed to determine whether or not there truly would be interference from low-power FM radio stations if you put them in a city like Houston, if you put them in a city like Miami. And so the FCC commissioned an independent corporation called the MITRE Corporation, M-I-T-R-E, to study whether or not low-power FM radio stations would be allowed in these big communities, or should be allowed. And the MITRE Corporation came back after spending $2.2 million, and they proved that there was plenty of room for low-power FM in America's biggest cities as well as small communities. So you ask the question, is can we pass a law to give community radio back to the people in 2007? In the 108th and the 109th Congresses, which are the Congresses before this one, which is the 110th, there were bills introduced that would have expanded low-power FM that did very well, even in a Republican-led Congress. They were led by John McCain, the senator from Arizona, and by Maria Cantwell, the senator from Washington State, and they took the MITRE study into account and said, we have the proof that Congress ordered. There's plenty of room for these vital community radio stations. Now is the time to expand them all across the United States. And that bill did really well in the last Congress. It passed 14-7 out of the committee that's responsible for telecommunications. So we had both conservative and progressive senators voting to say that community radio was great. Everyone from Sununu from New Hampshire and Vitter from Louisiana, both Republicans, voting alongside Barbara Boxer and Bill Nelson from Florida. So bipartisan, you know. Now in this Congress, we have two new bills introduced, and I'll probably say their names and their numbers a lot of times throughout the hour, but it's the Local Community Radio Act of 2007, Senate Bill 1675, House Bill 2802, and they were sponsored by Lee Terry, who's a Republican from Nebraska, on Omaha, which wanted low power FM and lost out because of Congress's actions, and Mike Doyle, who is a Congress member from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a Democrat, who is the vice chair of the Telecommunications Subcommittee. In the Senate, it's John McCain and Maria Cantwell again, and now's the time when listeners all across the United States can ask their Congress members to say, we want to be listening to this program on a terrestrial radio station. We want to turn to 98.9 or 102.7 on the dial and be able to hear diverse programming, syndicated and local. So you can ask your Congress members to expand Low Power FM to co-sponsor these bills, and you can do it by going to expandlpfm.org or to prometheusradio.org. You can also visit freepress.net/LPFM. It's also really important to understand some of the stories as to why low-power FM really is important in our communities, and I'd love to tell you about a few great stations.
You know, let me ask you, and there was a reason behind, before you go into that, Hannah, I'm trying to, you know, establish a criteria here. One of the things that I also want to ask you before we go into and delve in further into this other area is, why do we need this style of broadcasting at local levels? What is the value of this kind of broadcasting?
Well, I'm happy to tell you about that. And an example is one of the really, excuse me.
That's all right. You have the same throat that I have tonight. My allergies are really kicked in today. It must be all over.
Yeah, well, just so you know, like, it's really about why local radio is important in a consolidated media market. Ever since 1996, when the Senate passed the Telecommunications Act of 1996, allowing companies like Clear Channel to go from owning 40 stations, that's the cap that they were allowed to own in the United States, to being able to own 1,300, which is about what they own now. Ever since then, we've seen a great decline in the local service that radio provides. One of the stories that many people like to tell is a story of what happened in Minot, North Dakota, in January of 2001. In 2001, there was a train rolling through this very small town in North Dakota. It was happened to be one of the larger communities in the state. And what happened was, is it was the middle of the night, and the train had a load of ammonia, basically, like a kind of a, and it was something that you could add to fertilizer, like a sort of a aerated ammonia substance. And the train derailed, and this substance spilled all over the countryside, and it was a heavy cloud of poison gas, basically, right? And it was rolling towards the town of Minot. So there was a poison cloud rolling towards town. The police tried to activate the emergency alert system, which everyone knows growing up, this is a test of the emergency alert system, only a test, and it didn't work. So they started to call the radio station so people who were listening would know that they just had to shut their windows, shut their doors, put a towel under their door, not go outside, and that they'd be fine. But when they called the stations, the phones rang and rang and rang, and no one picked up. And the reason why is because every station in that town was owned by Clear Channel, the largest owner of radio stations across the United States, and they were all being run on autopilot. They were all being run by computer out of Bismarck, North Dakota, which was a much larger community about an hour away. All the DJs, all the music was programmed by computer, no local people at the station, no one there at that hour of night. Because of that, people got extremely sick. There was a ton of property damage. A lot of livestock and cattle got really sick and died. And it was really a wake-up call for many legislators and millions of community members across the United States. So let me give you an example of what Minot could have done had they had local low-power FM community radio. One of the stories that I really like to tell, and I can tell as many as you like, but is of the Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, and a community radio station called WQRZLP, a low-power station licensed to the Hancock County Community Broadcasters. Now, when Hurricane Katrina rolled through Bay St. Louis, this is ground zero for the hurricane, right? It's right next door to Waveland, Mississippi. It's where Katrina made landfall for the first time. Of the 41 radio stations lining that part of the Mississippi and Louisiana Gulf Coast, only a handful of them stayed on the air, less than six, and one of them was WQRZLP. That station, because it was run by local volunteers who lived in the community, they swam across the floodwaters with generator batteries strapped to their back. They climbed 130-foot radio towers to move to higher ground. Because they did that, WQRZLP, a 100-watt radio station run by volunteers, was the only communication source to the outside world for 48 hours after the storm. The station got such commendation that it received an award from the president, from the county, from the ham radio operators, and what you could hear on that station was where you could find water and ice, where shelters were, and people were calling into the station or going by to find out about their local family members to see if they had survived or not. So what we're talking about is, and this is obviously the starkest example, is that community radio, locally owned radio, rather than a radio station or a TV station or a newspaper owned by a conglomerate that's 2,000 miles away, local community radio can save lives. But the only reason why it can save lives is because it's extremely relevant, right? Another strong example that I like to give is of WCTI-LP. It's a community radio station licensed to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Immokalee, Florida. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers do incredible work working with immigrants to the United States and Latino communities and many other communities who speak Spanish often as a second language. They speak Zapotec, Quiche, Canjobal, and other indigenous Mexican and Guatemalan languages. They speak Haitian Creole. And so it's this incredibly diverse community of farm workers. When many of these workers were working out in the fields in during Hurricane Wilma, which was in 2005, and they were listening to the radio, they didn't understand what was going on as the sky was getting dark, that it was a hurricane coming. And so while the county was putting out vans to help people get out of the threat of the storm and to go to shelters, many of the workers were not able to access those vans, except they were listening to WCTILP, the station owned by the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, Radio Conciencia, and they'd been listening to that station. That station was run by the farm worker community. It was based at the Coalition of Immokalee Workers headquarters. People did everything from play local music to do shout-outs for the quinceañeros, the 15-year-old birthday of many local kids, to organize to free the slaves, to free slaves in the fields of Southwest Florida. Because that station was the relevant station to those farm workers, they listened to Radio Conciencia, and that station really gave back. They sent vans out and rescued 350 workers from the storm. I got that story from Gerardo Reyes Chavez, who testified before the entire Federal Communications Commission on the work his station did at a recent media ownership hearing in Tampa, Florida. So community radio earns its listeners by putting city council members on the air, by putting youth on the air, local music, by bolstering the local music scene, by connecting with local health programs, library programs.
Which brings me to the next level of this, Anna, a very important area. I want to ask you a couple of very pertinent questions, and I think from here on in, everyone is going to see, listening to you discuss the low-powered radio frequencies and the advantageousness of them, sounds like the apple pie of FM radio. Now, what is Clear Channel? Who owns it? And how are they threatened by low-powered radio?
Well, Clear Channel is one corporate owner of radio stations among many that are part of the National Association of Broadcasters, which lobbies against low-power FM. But Clear Channel is the canary in the coal mine for media consolidation. And what media consolidation is the trend in the modern ownership of big commercial radio stations to allow stations to be owned by owners that are distant, that are out of town, and to allow one group to own up to 8 or 12 or 16 media properties in one city. So if I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, right, which is where Prometheus Radio Project is based, Clear Channel owns 6 stations, I think. And we have one owner that owns both of the daily newspapers and another owner that owns the cable system. And currently, Prometheus and many other organizations are in a pitched battle to make sure that the FCC doesn't allow one company to own all of those properties. But just to focus on Clear Channel, what Clear Channel does is they don't have local DJs on the air almost, they never have a ton of local DJs on the air. They get their playlists from San Antonio, Texas, which is the headquarters of Clear Channel, and they do something called voice tracking, where when Clear Channel buys up a bunch of properties, they move all of the headquarters for the smooth jazz station, the talk radio station, the top 40 hits, the urban station, and the sports station into one building, right? A cluster, they call it. They fire most of the staff and have one running 6 radio stations, and they take an audio feed from their most popular stations, and they pushed it into the stations in town. So you might have someone based in Omaha, Nebraska, doing the weather for Chico, California, for Kennebec, Maine, and for Rapid City, South Dakota, you know? Like, they do all of this extra programming, then they try to save money by putting it in the hands of one or two different DJs. So what that means is that what used to make America really exciting when you were driving in your car across the country is no longer happening. We're not listening to local radio anymore. Here's an example of what Clear Channel did most recently, which really made people stand up and take notice, among many other of their bad behaviors. Last year, last spring, spring, there was a show on a Clear Channel station in New York City. It was the Star and Buck Wild show. It was a talk morning program, and DJ Star had a rivalry with a DJ at Hot 97, another local New York station named DJ Envy. DJ Star, you know, he was not particularly fun to listen to if you didn't like a lot of, you know, really crass humor. But one day he went really far by threatening the four-year-old daughter of DJ Envy. He threatened to offer $500 to anyone who could tell him what preschool DJ Envy's daughter went to. He said that he would do some pretty disgusting bodily functions on this child, and it made the entire city go up in an uproar, and he was eventually fired from the station. But that's not necessarily, that matters, but what matters even more is that Clear Channel was syndicating the DJ Star and Buck Wild program on 11 other stations up and down the East Coast. So that fight between DJ Star and DJ Envy was definitely irrelevant to the people of New York who didn't want to hear a four-year-old being threatened on the air. But it was even more irrelevant if you lived in Atlanta, Georgia, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or Greenville, South Carolina, or these other affiliates where this content was on the air. If you have a local radio station that's owned by someone 3,000 miles away, and you threaten to boycott advertisers, you know, you're going to have a lot less impact than if you threaten to boycott the advertisers of an owner that owns just one station or just two stations in your local community. Clear Channel also makes it so local businesses have much less of an ability to buy an ad on the air. Clear Channel, when they come into a community and buy up different stations, what they do is they try to make sure that all of the different corporations that want to get on the air on all of the stations negotiate with their advertisers team. So you have to pay a high premium and get access to all of the stations. They won't let you get half an hour during the public affairs program on Sunday morning on the talk radio station if that's what you want, if that's the audience you're trying to reach. You have to pay 10 times as much and also be playing, like selling your wares on six other stations in town at the times that they decide are most appropriate at Clear Channel. So there's many examples of how the Clear Channelization of the airwaves, and this is happening with Infinity Radio, with Viacom, obviously with the owners of television stations like GE, like Time Warner. This is happening in many different kinds of corporate media. We need locally accountable media, not just to save lives in the case of emergencies or to put our elders on the air or to have really strong local debates about local politics, but we need it because it's a part of our community. Media systems are essential for local businesses, for local not-for-profit organizations to get the word out about the work they do.
Well, you know, at least we denigrate Clear Channel's capacity for media. What we have here, a station that owns 1,200 radio stations, 37 television stations, with investments in 240 radio stations globally. Clear Channel Entertainment, also known as SFX, one of their more well-known subsidiaries, owns and operates over 200 venues nationwide. Yes. They are 248 of the top 250 radio markets, controlling 60% of all rock programming, and they outright own the tours of musicians like Janet Jackson, Aerosmith, Pearl Jam, Madonna, NSYNC. They also air shows like Rush Limbaugh, Dr. Laura, Fox Sports Radio,
Sean Kennedy, Michael Savage.
And this is this is a powerful company. This is literally a monopoly within our communication system.
It is, and one of the great things about low-power FM radio is that when you build a locally accountable radio station, it actually gives you some power to fight back against that monopoly. And we can talk about other ways you can fight back, too. But, for example, one of the stations that Prometheus was lucky enough to be involved with was KOCZ, which is a station in Opelousas, Louisiana, built by the Southern Development Foundation. It's a longtime civil rights organization founded by black and Creole families. When they went on the air, there was no way that you could hear one of the most primary American music forms, Zydeco music, anywhere on the FM dial in Opelousas. And Opelousas is the community where Zydeco was born, right? It's a wonderful local cultural forum, beloved around the world. Opelousas holds the world's largest Zydeco festival every year. The Southern Development Foundation puts it on. But when they built KOCZ, or Opelousas Community Zydeco, they had hours every day of Zydeco music. And because that station got so many listeners, so much support, and did so much work itself supporting the local community through underwriting, through putting local church programming on the air, through playing local teen health programs, the local stations in town owned by Cumulus and Cox, which are two other major broadcast entities, started playing Zydeco music again. It started being accountable to the history of the community where these stations are and where Zydeco was born. So when we talk about Low Power FM, it's not just because these stations are really amazing. It's because Low Power FM is one solution, one tool in the fight against media consolidation. If one company like Clear Channel owns the local newspaper, owns a local TV station, owns 6 radio stations or 8 radio stations, and is the only place where you can see a show and buy a ticket to see that show, what we need are alternative, locally determined venues to give options to our community members. We also need to fight these rules that the FCC has put out, which allow companies like Clear Channel to do what they're trying to do at the Federal Communications Commission. And you can learn more about how to do that. The FCC is asking the American public to comment on media consolidation now, even today, at stopbigmedia.com. It's a great coalition site where people are fighting media consolidation day in and day out.
Well, one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard was something that had come up during World War II, and honestly, I couldn't find who had said it, but it goes, the first sign of the loss of democracy is the loss of a free media. How can monopolizing the media the way Clear Channel does and other major broadcasting venues help us to lose our freedom of speech and the loss and therefore propagate the loss of democracy?
Well, it's important to understand that some of the most major pieces of the national debate have been predicated by the corporate media, and a control of the media is an opportunity for us to change that debate. Two examples I like to talk about are the war in Iraq and the incredible media circus that was surrounding the tragedy of Terri Schiavo and her family. For the war in Iraq, in 2003, when the United States was leading up to war, when you turned on the television, you didn't see local people in Iraq or around the country debating whether or not the war was a good or a bad idea. What you saw were pictures of tanks, of airplanes, of aircraft carriers, of troops loading up and getting ready to ship out. And what that was GE is the largest supplier of high-end military equipment to the Pentagon. They also outright own NBC, the National Broadcasting System, one of the 4 big broadcasters in the U.S., and dozens of television stations across the United States. So it's not in their interest, right? It's not in their interest to have debate about the war because they're really poised to profit from it. And some of the largest grassroots upswell against media consolidation came around the war in Iraq. Now, the media was totally swarming around Florida, around the community where Terri Schiavo's family was going through this really intense personal crisis. Because the media was giving that crisis so much coverage, senators, congress members, and religious leaders who had nothing to do with what the family was going through flew down to Florida and insinuated themselves into a private family tragedy. Everyone was disgusted by that, you know? And so what we're talking about is keeping the media accountable. The FCC has a few tools set up to keep the media accountable. You can challenge a company's license. You can get the FCC to deny the license. But these tools have not been flexed. They have not been flexed regularly by the American public in a way that the FCC stands up and listen. The FCC currently lets a station, a radio or television station, send in a postcard, basically, that says, hey, give us our license renewal. Let us use this license for another 7 years. Really, 7 or 8 years. It takes a really long time. When before, you were able to challenge or have to request a license renewal every 2 or 3 years. So what we're talking about is an erosion of the places where community members across the country had an opportunity to hold these stations accountable. And so what we really need to do go ahead.
What I was going to say is, in other words, according to this kind of mentality and this kind of reasoning at the level of the media, Originally, we thought that this war in Afghanistan and Iraq destroyed freedom of press, but in actuality, what's happened is the manipulation of the media destroyed Afghanistan and Iraq.
Well, it's always a part of it. Like, if you take a look at what the American military did after they went through the initial bombing campaign, which ousted Saddam Hussein, one of the first things they did was set up propaganda. They set up TV and radio station broadcasts on the aircraft carriers that were in the Gulf, that were broadcasting directly into Iraq. There's been so much censorship and so much limitation of local free speech and local independent press in and around the country that it's been very difficult for us to get the real story as to what's going on there. The propaganda has been a tool of making war forever, and most prominently, like, there's been a lot of study of how yellow journalism, of American corporations and American, like, government, like, covering wars throughout the 19th and 20th century in a way that prioritized the viewpoints they wanted to put across. We need to fight for fair media no matter what we care about most deeply, whether it's the health of our kids, the fairness of our electoral system, the struggles that people are going through around the world, the environment, the war, or our healthcare system, you know? Like, having access to a free and open media and keeping the media more accountable in a local way, a regional way, and a national way is an instrument of success and of organizing that we can't ignore, that we ignore at our peril.
Well, you know, we have to take a short break. And for those of you that have just signed on with us, this is Hannah Sossaman from Prometheus Radio Project. Thank you very much, Hannah. We'll be back in just a moment. We will be taking call-ins for those of you that are interested in speaking to our guest and asking her a question. You may call toll-free at 888-861-3519. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
Join host Bassima Farhat on The People Speak as she interviews guests from the realms of politics, activism, spirituality, science, and entertainment. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on The People Speak, an audience interactive program where your voice counts.
Got questions? The library has got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, this is Randy Rhodes. You know, when Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held serious bipartisan investigations that did result in articles of impeachment. He resigned before he could be impeached, but strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war, lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court orders, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, tortured, used illegal weapons, and targeted civilians. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our show, The People Speak Radio. Tonight, The People Speaks with Hannah Sossaman from Prometheus Project, Radio Project. Thank you, Hannah, for being with us. We've got a couple of callers, Hannah. Jim from Michigan would like to ask you a question.
Hey there, Jim. Jim, can't hear you.
Jim, are you with us?
My question is, Hannah, first of all, we do have a diversity of talk radio stations that offer some of the same services that you feel that are good. I've also seen Clear Channel stations help out in disasters and communities. With the economic structure in many areas in deficit, what do you feel about getting the same idea that you put across by asking for use of the HD extra channels that are now opened up through HD radio?
That's a really great point. And thank you very much for your call, Jim. I think it's important for people to understand that low power FM is just one of the different tools that people can really engage in to have a more accountable media system. What Jim is talking about is called the digital transition. Both television and radio in the United States are going to be transitioning to putting their content out over the airwaves digitally, meaning that it's that the actual signals are going to take up a lot less space, and that there's going to be extra space that we are allowed, that is available potentially for community members to use. One of the best examples of resources that are used by a commercial system is cable access TV. When Comcast or Time Warner or whatever your local cable company is comes into a community and they get permission to dig up the sidewalks and the streets and to lay cable everywhere, they do it only because they also get permission, or they also are forced by the local town to give back some resources to the local community. They have what's called a franchise. They get almost monopoly access to our homes by saying that they're going to also potentially build a studio, give the community 3 to 5 channels, and that we can produce our own local programming. Public access TV has over, I think, 1 million hours of programming produced all over the country in a year, and they provide incredible local services, especially for schools, local governments, local community members. We have an opportunity now to agitate at the Federal Communications Commission for them to set up a law that says, or set up a rule that says, when your local, let's say that you live in Detroit and you have WDET, when your local NPR station suddenly is broadcasting in digital, they're going to be putting out one signal that takes up a seventh or a sixth of the space that it took up before. Now, we could decide that it's okay for a Clear Channel, for NPR affiliates, for all of the local broadcasters to just create whatever content they want and use those airwaves however they want to use them, or we can use this as an opportunity to tell the FCC that these airwaves belong to us, remind them of that fact, they forget it a lot of the time, and that these stations need to give back some of their channels to folks living in the local community, creating public access radio as well as public access TV. I think it's a great strategy, but I'm really focused on low-power FM only because these stations are extremely inexpensive to put on the air. You can build a station for anywhere between $5,000 and $20,000, which really isn't a lot when you're talking about building a new institution, and you can run them with volunteers, with donated equipment, and only end up paying your music licensing fees and your electricity bill throughout the year. So that could be like just paying about $1,000 a year to license the music that you put on the air. And so what we're talking about is building institutions that are going to be essential for generations after we're alive. Like, if we turn around in 20 years and the radio stations on the air continue to be conservative talk owned by companies living thousands of miles outside of town, or Christian radio that doesn't allow local people on the air, we're never going to forgive ourselves. That's why House Bill 2802 and Senate Bill 1675, the Local Community Radio Act of 2007, is so important, and that's why you guys have to go to expandlpfm.org to sign up to fight to expand these services all across the United States.
Hannah, can you repeat those acts, please, for our voter audience that is listening right now?
You can ask your senator to co-sponsor Senate Bill 1675. It was put out by John McCain and Maria Cantwell, Local Community Radio Act of 2007, or you can ask your congress member to co-sponsor House Bill 2802. That was put out by Lee Terry and by Mike Doyle, and what these bills would do is that they would expand low-power FM to thousands more communities, including America's big cities and smaller places all across the U.S. And you can get involved by going to expandlpfm.org, prometheusradio.org, freepress.net/LPFM. There's tons of places to get involved.
Thank you, Hannah. Our next caller is Mike from California.
Hey, Mike. Can't hear you, Mike.
Hi, Hannah. I've always felt that the problem with the current situation we have in the United States, including the mess in Iraq, is because Americans aren't informed. Our national commercial media isn't doing its job. And I've always felt, it always starts at the grassroots, the community level. and your efforts to build FM radio that is in the hands of community seems to be really this at the basis of the solution, because with that, you can spread information and inform people so they can make informed decisions and actions. But I was wondering, why wouldn't you go with something like low power AM? Is it just for the sake of a better quality sound with low power FM? As I understand it, low power AM is much less expensive. That's my question. Thank you.
Well, no problem. Low power AM is something that a number of groups are agitating for at the Federal Communications Commission. I think most prominent among them is a group called the Amherst Alliance, which has engineers, lawyers, and community members that really support that service. We work for low power FM radio primarily because it's one of the most relevant technologies out there. Most people have about 9 radios in their lives, in your house, in your shower sometimes, your clock radio when you wake up in the morning, in your car, when you go to the bank, at work. And FM radio is a technology that's pretty easy to propagate. And by propagate, I mean technically propagate. If you understand AM radio at all, the radio works on something called wavelength, frequency. You have a box, right? You're speaking into the box. You got a microphone. The box is a console. It turns it into electricity. And then that it goes into a transmitter, which basically vibrates really, really fast at many thousands of hertz per second, at megahertz per second, at 98.1 megahertz per second. And what that does is you get that signal shooting out of an antenna, and then it's received by your radio receiver that has an antenna sticking up in the air, and it's tuned to that frequency, so it's ready to listen to anything going out at 98.1 or whatever, and then suddenly it's totally transformed back into sound that you can understand. AM radio has a very long frequency, meaning that that little box vibrates real slowly as compared to FM. So at night, you have to turn your power actually down really low because the wavelength is so long that it actually escapes the atmosphere and it can go all the way around the United States. So low power FM is easier because you don't have to worry about that. If you were dealing with low power AM and there were thousands of low power AM stations licensed across the United States, there would be a lot more potential for crazy technical problems and interference. The FCC was willing to establish low power FM, which was something that would have a lot more control, that they wouldn't have to worry as much about interference. Congress got in the way, but we're working to get them out of the way. So we really encourage you to, you know, contact local low-power FM radio stations. You can learn more about them at lpfmdatabase.com. It's a great website done by an incredible community organizer named Pirate Jim. And you can contact a local station in your community. You can also go to prometheusradio.org/map tool. We have a Google map up there that has links to all of the stations all around the country. So you can put in your city and state and see if there's a community radio station in your neck of the woods. There's a lot fewer than we would like. Again, only 800 on the air, and almost none in big cities like San Francisco or San Diego, but we know that community radio stations are going to be available if we come together and support Senate Bill 1675 and House Bill 2802.
Well, you know, I've been accused of escaping the atmosphere without radio waves, so tough, Anna.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Matt of California. Matt, can you please ask your question of Hannah?
Let me correct that. That's Matt from Wichita, Kansas. What kind of range will these stations have and cover, and how big an area? Thank you.
Hey, Matt. Thank you for calling from Wichita. These stations are 100 watts, which means that they cover 3 to 5 miles. So they're perfect for downtown Wichita. It would probably get most of the metro area. It's a really good example. And if you put it higher up, you know, if you find a place that's a little higher up, you're going to go a little bit farther, too. So it's really meant to be neighborhood radio, community radio, to cover an entire small town or a part of a city. One group that applied that we really cared a lot about was a community group called the Hmong Community Arts Center. It was Hmong immigrants, recent immigrants, and longer-term immigrants doing community arts, community politics, supporting each other in the great city of Minneapolis. But because low-power FM was restricted by Congress, their license application was canceled. We really want both individual community groups in Wichita and the and numbers of groups in big cities like Minneapolis, like Detroit, like Milwaukee, to have the chance to have their own community radio stations. Listeners should also know that for rural areas, if you live in, or if you live in a city like Wichita or a city like Topeka, which is a relatively small city, that there is going to be a licensing window that the FCC is opening up for something called Full Power FM. And these are the last full power non-commercial frequencies that the FCC is basically ever going to give out. It's the last frontier for 5,000, 50,000, 100,000 watt radio stations. So if you want to build the next institutions of community media in your neck of the woods, if you're listening from a community like Boulder, Colorado, you know how much KGNU matters, like hundreds of thousands of watts serving Boulder, serving Denver. If you live in Maine, you know how much WERU matters to your community. If you live in New York, you know about WBAI, 50,000 watts in the city of New York. These stations can cover so many people, and October 12th through 19th is the last chance that people will get to apply to these full power FM stations. If you want to see if there's a frequency available in your community, you should go to getradio.org, and then you can put in your zip code, and then we'll tell you if there's potentially a frequency in your area. Getradio.org is a project of the Radio for People Coalition at radioforpeople.org, and also Free Press, the Future of Music Coalition, and many other religious groups like the United Methodists, the United Church of Christ, and community organizations around the country. So that's something else that people living in communities like Wichita, Topeka, small communities should keep in mind, as well as low-power FM radio. As much as we're encouraging people to support Senate Bill 1675, House Bill 2802, that might be something you're interested in as well.
You know, thank you very much, Hannah. This has just been incredibly informative. You know, I guess Matt has called back and wants to, from Kansas, has called back and wants to ask you one more question. Matt,
okay.
If you'll give us a brief question, go right ahead.
Who are these going to fund, these stations? How are they going to be funded? That's the next question.
Well, you know what, Matt, that's a good question, but it's actually a question that I want to ask you. You know, like, when you have a local community church, you know, members of that church, they make a donation every year to be a member. Or if you have a local community school, maybe that school has a drive every year where local students engage with local businesses, get sponsorship for the local art show. We're not talking about building a Fortune 500 company. What we're talking about building is a community radio station that you can build for not that much money when you come down to it, for like maybe between $20,000 and $100,000 if it's a full power station, or $5,000 to $20,000 if it's a low power station. And then what it's about is how good an organizer are you? How important is your station going to be to your community? If you go out there and you talk to the local Arab American community, if you talk to the local gay rights community, if you talk to the local like libertarian community, if you get youth on the air, if you get people supporting the local elders on the air, then your station is going to be so relevant that people are not going to know what life is like without it. And so that's how you're going to get supported. These stations can have underwriting just like any membership-based station where you know, you have someone saying, this program was brought to you by the Pennsylvania Federal Credit Union. You know, it's local underwriting. And people can make donations, and you can have membership drives. These are institutions that depend on community support to survive. If you have problems building your station at the very start, you can apply to the government for a federal grant to pay for your equipment. But from then on, it's really up to you. It's your vision.
Well, because no radio station is worth its salt without all the work and the people that put their efforts together, Matt.
Just one more thing to throw in. Matt should also understand that if he builds a station, he's not going to be alone. There's thousands of community radio stations on the air, and there's so much deep wisdom in the community radio movement. People who know everything from how to put together an automation system to do an overnight playlist if you don't have anyone in your studio, doing grassroots fundraising to putting together a community board. This is a movement you're joining, and you won't be alone when you start your own community station for Wichita.
You know, what I'd like to ask, one of our guests is asking, what is the antenna height for a station like that?
Well, it depends, right? Like, let's say that you live in a really mountainous area. Let's say that you live in Laramie, Wyoming, that has a community radio station, La Radio Montecito, La Voz de la Gente. And that's a fantastic station that does a lot of Spanish language and other kinds of community programming. It's really high up there. So, you know, you might have a tower. It has to be a certain height above average terrain, H-A-T. But, you know, it's really not about how much coverage you get, because you end up having to position your tower so you get 100 watts of average coverage according to some algorithms at the FCC. It's how hard you work to get your station really beloved by the community. One of the stations that we built is WRFNLP, Radio Free Nashville 98.9. It's actually not in Nashville proper because, of course, Congress limited low-power FM, and you couldn't build in the city. It's about 10 miles out of town in Pasquo, Tennessee. But because that station does such a fantastic job of dedicating local programmers, because they organize to have a great radio stream at radiofreenashville.org, because they're organizing now to work with a local public access channel and digital TV to have their station streamed over television that way, they're going to get tons more listeners in Nashville proper. So, you know, when we expand low power FM, if you put 100 watts in a big city, you're going to reach hundreds of thousands of people. But if you really want to get a big station, go to getradio.org and see if you can get 5,000, 10,000, or 50,000 watts for your community. But we really hope that you'll also support Senate Bill 1675, House Bill 2802, the Local Community Radio Act of 2007, which will expand LPFM across the country. And you can go to PrometheusRadio.org, or you can go to ExpandLPFM.org to support those bills and call your Congress members.
Well, you know, Hannah, before that was the last caller, I'd like to ask you briefly to talk to us about, well, first of all, according to the last survey done by Reporters Without Borders, Kenya came in at 118 on the Worldwide Press Freedom Index of 206, and you were there helping to initiate three radio stations, three low-powered FM radio stations in Kenya. How can even one survive with such a low rating on the Freedom of Press index of Reporters Without Borders?
Well, community groups around the nation and around the world are alike by needing to make stations that are relevant to their communities. We built stations in Guatemala, Nepal, Colombia. We built stations in Jordan. We've built stations in Tanzania. One of the stations we built in Tanzania was with a community center that's run by ex-Black Panthers and local community organizers in the city of Arusha. That station has very few resources compared to any, I'm sure as compared to your internet radio station. But because local hip-hop crews come on the air, because it's tied in with a community center that promotes local dancing, local theater, local culture and art, it's considered to be a vital part of the work they do. So it survives and it thrives there. And in nations like Kenya, we built a station with Maseno University, which is one of the premier communications universities for the nation. They got a license from the CCK, the Kenyan Regulatory Commission that governs who gets radio licenses. And they went through, they jumped through all the hoops, and now they're able to build their station. So it's all going to matter on how the community uses it and how relevant it becomes. They may have crackdowns on press freedom, but local community radio stations really will thrive when they're built by communities who are ready for them and who agitate to build these important vehicles for democracy.
Well, this congratulations, bravo. I mean, how wonderful. One more question that I'm really dying to ask you. How did you manage to get eliminated from all National Association of Broadcasters events? You're banned from all of them, from my understanding. Now, that is one heck of a woman in my eyes.
Well, it's very sweet, I guess. Like, I did a stunt at the National Association of Broadcasters radio show with some really great community organizers where we were trying to really spoof some of the work that they were doing against low-power FM radio. We dropped some banners. It was really exciting. And then the next year, when I was working with dozens of community radio stations to gain entrance to the National Association of Broadcasters radio trade show to report on it, right, not to throw any kind of stunts or do any damage of any kind. I got a call from Dennis Wharton, who's the vice president of the NAB, saying that it was fine for the community radio stations to come in, but that I couldn't come in because I hadn't really used my privilege well before. And that's okay. I really hope that the National Association of Broadcasters is willing to understand that in an era of iPods, in an era of, digital TV on demand, that if they want local community radio to remain the extremely relevant source that it is, they should strengthen the diversity of voices that come out on the air rather than weaken them. So I hope that we can work together with the NAB and with NPR and all of the people who opposed Low Power FM in the past. And I hope that we can all support House Bill 2802, Senate Bill 1675, the Local Community Radio Act of 2007, and ask our Congress members to expand community radio to America's big cities, and we can go to expandlpfm.org to figure out how to do that right now.
Well, thank you, Hannah, very much. You have been an incredibly informative and wonderfully entertaining guest. I know we've got here, just so you know, everybody, we've done it here on BBS Broadcasting. We started our own radio show, and we've had unbelievable success with it. You can do it, too. Get out there. The information is on the website. We've been posting the website in the virtual auditorium. You can go to PrometheusRadio.org. Hannah, thank you very much for being here. Thursday night's guest is George Galloway, British parliamentarian, and gorgeous George Extraordinaire. Very entertaining. He's the man that took on Congress and won. Just for everybody's information, and we'll see you all Thursday night. Hannah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Have a good night for being with us this evening. Excellent show. Excellent participation. Thank you all for your support. It's because of you that our show has grown and grown and grown. Thank you. Good night, everybody. This is Basma signing off.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.